big day today, and we're recording this program on Martin Luther King Day, which has been a federal holiday since, I didn't realize it went back so far, 1983. So which president signed it into a, made it a federal holiday? Well, Ronald Reagan. So, and now we have, again, since, 2011, the national parks have had this fee-free day for national holidays, including ML King Day. And more recently, Juneteenth was added to that list. But in stark contrast to President Reagan, we have President Trump now negating the value of ML King Day and Juneteenth. They are no longer on the list of national holidays that you can expect to go to a national park and not have to pay a fee. Of course, added to the list is Flag Day, which is June 14th, which is not coincidentally, in my opinion, or in the opinion of many, also President Trump's birthday. So basically, we're getting rid of the two holidays that matter most to the black community, and we're adding in Trump's birthday. Who doesn't see some problem with that? I mean, is there anybody out there who thinks that's fair, reasonable, you know, good in any way, shape, or form? So one thing special about ML King Day is it's a national day of service, public service. It's been recognized, you know, kind of casually, but a lot of service projects happen on ML King Day, including at national parks. In fact, the National Park website says, and I'll quote, "Volunteering your time and talent on Martin Luther King Day helps make Dr. King's vision of a beloved community a reality." And they give examples like planting trees, cleaning up trails, removing graffiti, picking up litter. But this year, that's out, you know. That's out. So is Juneteenth. But again, Flag Day, a.k.a. Trump's birthday, is in. And I don't know how anybody cannot see what's going on here. I mean, you cancel the two holidays important to the black community, and you wonder why some people think you might be a racist. You know, of course, I mean, so many examples, but the one that comes to my mind is him having, a few years ago, Nick Fuentes over for a dinner at Mar-a-Lago. Now, Fuentes is that self-described white Christian nationalist. That's not me calling him a white Christian nationalist. That's his own term. He calls himself a white Christian nationalist. He's also a Holocaust denier. You know, and I could go on and on about Trump's statements that make it clear that he's a racist. I mean, I don't throw that word around lightly, but clearly what's going on is not even subtle. There's nothing subtle about it. I do want to make a comment about ML King Day as a day of national service, and that's, you know, that's good. I'm glad people are picking up litter, clearing trails, you know, volunteering in whatever way possible in their hometown. But the danger of just calling it a day of national service is to ignore that the much deeper importance of King's work and the 1960s struggle in general, the struggle for justice and civil rights. I mean, that was not just about public service. It was about justice, about civil rights, about standing up against oppression. And I think that's the important, most important part of recognizing ML King Day. Public service, good, you know, picking up litter, great, but there are deeper concerns, and those are sometimes ignored by people who celebrate this day. So, you know, it's also important to remember and to emphasize too that struggle in the 1960s was nonviolent, you know. I mean, black people and their white allies getting clubbed and arrested on the news night after night, peacefully protesting, you know. I mean, that made a big impact on people. You know, and I know at the risk of getting canceled, I've been canceled before, so I can take it. I'm going to throw down a challenge to people who are currently protesting the injustice and discrimination on tap every night regarding Trump and the ICE approach to dealing with immigration. You know, I mean, I see so many examples. I don't even know where to start. But there's a new short little ditty out of a large crowd, I think, in Minneapolis. I can't remember the entire song. It's certainly not worth remembering, in my opinion. But it basically concludes by calling Kristi Noem the C word, which I can't say on an FCC-regulated station and don't really want to say. The whole crowd is chanting that and calling her that name. There's plenty of footage of people throwing snowballs and other stuff at officers or at people who are supporting the immigration raid, screaming obscenities and doing other things that that seem to me to not fit the definition of nonviolence. And to be clear, I am not a strict pacifist. There are situations in which pacifism is not the appropriate response. And we can talk more about that. And I know I have pacifist friends who are purists when it comes to nonviolence. My argument is that nonviolence is almost always the best strategy, but that you can't embrace pure pacifism. If you do, then there are cases where you will be avoiding your moral obligation to respond to injustice. But that's another conversation. Right now, we're dealing with a situation where I think nonviolence is absolutely the right approach. And, you know, we've got Martin Luther King Jr. as an example. Not that long ago, our own country, one of our greatest leaders, a national holiday that recognizes him, that used to get you a free pass into national parks, but doesn't anymore for now. And we've got plenty of other historical examples of how nonviolent action can and should work in this kind of a situation. And I highly recommend to you a book by Paul and Mark Engler, This is an Uprising, which talks about a wide range of struggles. One of the most memorable, in my opinion, is what transpired in Serbia about 25 years ago in response to the dictatorship of Slobodan Milosevic. I want to share with you, though, again, further back, Mahatma Gandhi, and everybody who is doing anything relevant to nonviolent action has taken a page from Gandhi's work. And I want to share with you some thoughts from one of the best books written about Gandhi's approach to social change called Conquest of Violence by Joan Bondurant. And she talks about the Gandhian code of discipline, which he set for his volunteers back in the 1930s struggle, one of many struggles. And so I'll read some of these points to you. One, harbor no anger, but suffer the anger of the opponent. Refuse to return the assaults of the opponent. Two, do not submit to any order given in anger, even though severe punishment is threatened for disobeying. Three, refrain from insults and swearing. Four, protect opponents from insult or attack, even at the risk of life. I'll skip a couple there that really aren't relevant to our situation and go to seven, if taken prisoner, behave in an exemplary manner. And eight, as a member of a Satyagraha unit, Satyagraha was the name of the movement, as a member of a Satyagraha unit, obey the orders of Satyagraha leaders and resign from the unit in the event of serious disagreement. You know, I see those traits sadly lacking in the movement in opposition to ICE. And I understand where people are coming from. I mean, I wake up, I start, my first thing to do in the morning after brewing a strong cup of tea is to read the news. And it's hard not to be angry. It's hard not to be very frustrated about what's going on and to want to vent and shout and scream and swear. And yeah, it's easy to do. I get it. But it's not the best response in terms of either the moral imperative to respond to this kind of hostility, negativity, evil. It's also not the best response in terms of effectiveness. And I think it's nice when those two things can come together. So yeah, I mean, you look at the video footage from the 1960s of black men sitting at counters in a restaurant, having food thrown at them, drink thrown at them, being, thrown out of the restaurant, being arrested, the water cannons, the dogs, you see all these people being taken off the freedom buses and being beaten. And you see, in the struggle for independence in India, Gandhi he was already in jail, but his community led an action at a salt mine in which people nonviolently just walked, approached the salt mine intending to get inside, and they did not raise a hand when they were beaten by clubs. Beaten with clubs by guards. And the effect that that had globally was to mobilize the international opinion against the British Empire. Just as here in the U.S., the images of blacks and their white allies being beaten and hosed and attacked by dogs in the 1960s mobilized American opinion against the oppression. In this case, oppression of local officials. An interesting twist here now is, you know, we're kind of rooting for the local officials and seeing the oppression come from the federal government, which is a very disturbing change. So anyway, again, you can cancel me if you like. I've been canceled before, but I strongly think that that this is not the way to go. And I want to slightly switch geographic approaches here. I want to look at Greenland, but on the same topic. And Trump is doubling down on his threats to take Greenland. And it's just kind of taking a bizarre twist this week with him saying that, you know, well, because Norway didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize, that's one reason I'm motivated to take Greenland. Wow. That's like a whole new level of narcissism and petulant, you know, childishness. But a good friend of mine, a very good friend, sent me a video last night. It was of Greenland preparing to defend itself against Donald Trump. And it was clever. It was funny. It was really good, actually. There were polar bears driving dog sleds, which is just great, right? Now, there was a phalanx of walruses, and one of them smoking a cigar. And the bears and the walruses and all the native people, the native Greenlanders, are standing there or on skis or on some kind of snowmobile, ready to defend their home against, and this is a quote from the video, a hungry giant who wants to take our shores and drink the oil and eat the ore. And that's a reference to Trump, of course. And they even show a little image of Trump coming in on a boat, pointing to the coastline that he wants to monopolize, that he wants to, you know, steal. And since this is radio and you can't see what I'm seeing, these polar bears, walruses, the people, even some penguins, are all armed to the hilt with guns and spears. So even beyond the question of whether or not you believe nonviolence is the best approach, do you really think that 57,000 Greenlanders, that's the total population, plus whatever European allies want to send in terms of soldiers, do you really believe that's going to stop the U.S. military? I mean, Trump says, you know, he'll follow through on his threat to take it the hard way. And we know what that means. That means military force. You know, you can bring all the troops you want, all the well-armed polar bears and walruses, and it's not going to stop the U.S. military. But I think what will stop the U.S. military would be a campaign along the lines of all the nonviolent struggles we've seen throughout our history that have perhaps less dramatically, perhaps more slowly, but have effectively eliminated the threat of a tyrant, of a hungry giant in this case. So again, what is this hungry giant after, of course? So he wants to invade Greenland because, you know, world opinion is already against him. So when we see the reasons that he wants to come in and take Greenland, you know, it becomes really obvious that this is not really about protecting America from Russia or China. This is about a huge trove of minerals and oil and resources that Trump thinks that we deserve to take. And, you look at the map of Greenland. I saw a map the other day about where the different mineral assets lie. And they're there. They're all over the place. And right now, Greenland won't touch them because they do not believe in extractive mining. They also don't even own private property. Well, if the U.S. takes over, you can bet, you know, there will be private property. It will be owned by corporations, and there will be mining. And again, some of the biggest tech bros that are lining up to take advantage of this are some of Trump's big supporters, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos. They know what's under the ground, and they are drooling to get it. That is what this is being. That's what this is all about. This is not about, even though Trump says he's upset about not getting the Nobel Peace Prize, that's not the real reason. Even though he says he's concerned about security, that's not the real reason. It's about the wealth. This is Avatar, but instead of blue people defending their planet against an imperial power, it's native people. Yeah, and polar bears and walruses. And I know in Avatar they use spears and other weapons to fight off the invaders. And that seems to be pretty much always what you see in Hollywood. But we have history to show us that there are other ways of defending oneself, one's land, one's freedom against imperialists, against conquerors. And I think, you know, whether it's in Greenland or in the streets of Minneapolis, I, for one, am very strongly embracing nonviolence as the vastly preferred and morally superior approach to dealing with these conflicts.